You're tuned into the all-new Freedom 106.5.
And now we step into Agribusiness Innovations with Mr. Jody White. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Tosca. Trinidad and Tobago, good morning. Of course, Agribusiness Innovation, the show that tells you everything that's happening in agriculture, innovation, and business around the world right here every Thursday from 10 to 11 a.m. Joining me today, I have Mr. Shivan Kirban of Fish Fins TT. Shivan, thank you for joining us.
Good morning, Jody. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
So for our listeners, today we're going to be talking about fish aquaculture, of which Shivan has a quite innovative business. Shivan, starting off, give our listeners an overview of what the company does.
All right. So, well, my company is really and truly more designed as a hatchery, right? So we produce tilapia, crayfish, and cascadura fingerlings for the local market, local and regional, right? So we produce young fish for stocking your ponds, your tanks, or, well, even recreational people, other people come to get it just to put it in their own recreational ponds.
You have a very youthful voice. Shivan, what's your age?
Oh, I'm actually 33. Soon to be 30. Well, I think I'm 32. Soon to be 33. Yeah.
So, how long has this business been in existence?
I would have started this business back in 2019. It was actually supposed to be a koi farm. If you would believe it was actually supposed to be a koi farm. That was where I wanted to be. But through a little, you know, guidance, certain individuals would have told me. So I actually rethought a couple of things that I would have wanted to say. Right? So as a young boy, I was always interested in fish. My mother would tell you, as a young boy, every drain or puddle in the road, I would have been looking for fish. Right? Every weekend, I would ask my dad to carry me to the pet shop. Sometimes he would carry me, sometimes he wouldn't. Right? So growing up, I always kept fish, fighters, mollies, Oscars, you name it. I probably had it at some point.
Now, it's not very often that we hear young people wanting to get into some field related to agriculture, whether it be plants or animals. So your love started from young, but you have quite a good educational background. You're university educated, correct?
Yes.
So, I mean, somebody with a BSc in what, biology, right?
Yeah, ecology, environmental biology, and microbiology. Yeah. There's a big specialization.
What made you decide then to not take a corporate job and to enter the world of business, especially in a field that is such hard work?
Well, the truth is, to be honest with you, there are not a lot of opportunities for individuals with qualifications like me in Trinidad and Tobago. You know, there are certain places that might need people like that, but the field is basically a company would take on one microbiologist and keep them for the entire duration of their life. So, really and truly, there are not much opportunities for people with specializations such as myself in Trinidad and Tobago, right? I, regardless of whatever job it is that I would have taken up, because I have worked a couple different jobs, my goal was always to build a fish farm. Always. Once I came up with that idea, I had that stuck in my head. So as a young person, I mean, yes, a lot of people might want to work for people, but me working for somebody was always with the intention of eventually doing something for myself. Yeah? I mean,
that's quite good. Now, you're talking about starting a business, starting to take care of fish, a hatchery. Mm.
Yeah.
How did you learn this?
Well, that's a good question. So a lot of the stuff that I learned would have been through the aquarium hobby. But I would tell you that it is a lot different. Yes, it is same in terms of, you know, basic care, but it is a lot more in depth when you go into farming, because remember, farming is more profit driven rather than just keeping the fish to see how pretty it is look, right? And the internet is a wealth of knowledge, right? There are also a lot of hobbyists who will gladly share information with you, but you really need to understand the science behind it. Like, you really need to be willing to listen and learn, right? So I did do a course in aquaculture at UWE, but that was just for me to say that I did one, right? Because at the point in time, somebody wanted to know if I had any qualifications, and so I just actually went and did a course to say that I had it, right? So the thing about it is a lot of people do call me and ask me about aquaculture in terms of fish farming, all the way to shrimp farming, right? A lot of people are interested in getting into it, but as I tell them, a lot of things sound very good on paper, but it's only when you actually get into it and you start experiencing the work that you need to put in, then you really understand, you know?
I mean, for me, taking care of fish in aquarium is guesswork. I mean, I put fish in water, I feed them, I try to keep it clean. For the first time in my life, after having fish since I was small, I actually had baby fish unexpectedly coming out. Just looked in the aquarium one day and I saw these little things kind of coming out. But yeah. Tell me something. What is the first hard lesson you would say that this business taught you?
Well, I would say the biggest lesson that I ever learned was not to get cocky. So I can remember the first day I had probably one of my biggest sales I ever had. And I was coming home. I was actually driving by Gulf City, you know, where they have the little cutout to I could actually pass through the back. And it have like a like something in the median there. That's where you tend to go in the car park up in Gulf City. I was there and I was like, wait, boy, I make it by next year this time, I should be driving a Porsche. Well, that's not how it went, right? Because remember, these things are living things, and any little problem that you have, any little slip up, something could go wrong, that's the end, you know?
Yeah, so, I think all of us founders, entrepreneurs, we always have that idea or hope that this thing could potentially take off very, very quickly and make back money very quickly, and you just kind of see the expenses building up. Now, as a young person, we always find that people have a hard time accessing enough capital to make a meaningful start.
Yep.
How was that experience for you?
Well, so I started this business from one aquarium. Literally 1 2-foot aquarium. Right? So I would have started with one aquarium, then I would have gotten two, then three, then I got a swimming pool, and then I had two swimming pools. And then one day, a friend came to me and he told me about, well, he's somebody who actually in aquaculture field. I'm not sure if he's still active, but his name was Darian, right? So Darian told me, you know, he have a friend who used to do tilapia farming and they're actually going to come out of it. So I get the opportunity to buy two large aquaculture tanks. So I take my savings and I went and buy them, right? So by this point now, I would have had two pools and two tanks, right? And then one day now, another friend told me about the youth fast track program, which the previous ministry would have run. And I would apply for a grant there. And to my surprise, I actually won. Actually was chosen, right? So since then to now, I have 12 aquaculture tanks. So, you know, that program really helped fast track my progress. Although I wouldn't let anything stop me from, you know, achieving that dream that I have. You know?
Are there other companies like yours in Trinidad?
In terms of hatcheries, not really. I have people who might produce fish, but not on a big scale. Right? The truth about the aquaculture industry is it's there that people want the fish, but our local population are more focused on fish from the sea.
Right.
Yeah.
So then the potential for us scaling up this industry, mm-hmm. because I mean, it's Lent right now, everybody complaining that price is high. Yeah, there was newspapers today mm-hmm. saying that, well, you know, it's the season. You think that aquaculture is something that could stabilize prices, especially during this time, and then taking that a little bit further. Mm-hmm. How hard is it for somebody to scale up something like a large enough aquaculture operation to be able to supply Trinidad?
Well, it's not really difficult. The problem really lies with getting more than one farmer on board and everybody being on the same page, right? This is something that I have been looking into in my personal, on the outside, right? Actually creating a large enough supply that we could then say, let me go to the big groceries and all the food places and try to get them to actually produce, well, not produce, but to get to purchase our fish then. This is something that I've actually been working on for some time, right? The difficult part is the science behind it. Everybody does think, a lot of people think, you take the fish, you put them in the tank, you watch them grow, then you sell them, right? That is not how aquaculture is. The volume of waste that we're dealing with, it is a lot. So I have a system right now, I'm trying to grow at about 565 tilapia to adult size. And every 3 days, right? So I collect the waste every day. Every 3 days, I have a bucket, a pigtail bucket full of solid waste. So if you're not on top of this, if you're not getting the solid waste out of your system, it causes silent problems, especially with a fish like tilapia. Because tilapia is a fish, they don't necessarily show that you have problems in your tank by dying. They show that you have problems in your tank by not growing, because they are a very resilient fish, right? So the main thing is just to get the farmers to be on the same page. Once the farmers on the same page and we have a large enough buyer, we could get this thing running. We need somebody to process the fish, obviously, which is something that Trinidad doesn't have. We don't have a processor. So a middleman to process the fish.
Depo has a certification for the facility, but I'm not too sure the extent to which the capability of processing is there. I know they have some sort of a certification as it relates to seafood, but that's actually quite interesting to find.
Because
out.
You see, the regulations that they will put on farm produced fish, because I was actually looking into it in order to start my own processing facility, is actually a lot. The cost is a lot because you have to have stainless steel countertops, reverse airflow, freezers, everything, vacuum pack, seal every single. So it's like it have real regulations when it comes to that, right? Because remember, if we're going to do this for mass production, we need to ensure a certain standard of safety with regard to food safety.
Does farmed fish taste different from wild-caught fish?
No, but it's actually better for you, right? So I could actually argue this point because I actually went into a discussion recently. I would have sent a letter to the Minister of Agriculture, right? So let me take, for example, this shark that was caught recently, this 640-pound shark. I don't know if you see it or you heard about it. Yes, the hammerhead.
Right.
Right? So this hammerhead shark, this 640-pound shark that they caught off the coast of Miami, right? So I would have sent, as I said, a letter to the minister trying to see if we could put any legislation in place. Because this fish, this great hammerhead, must be at least 40 years old, right? So sharks are apex predators. And from my research, through bioaccumulation and biomagnification, this shark would contain over 2 to 5 times the methylmercury levels that are safe for human consumption, according to the World Health Organization and the FDA, right? Compared to tilapia, which is 200 times safer to consume, right? Mercury is a heavy metal that attacks the nervous system and is a neurotoxin. So large sharks like this should not be harvested because they are a threat to public health, right? And they also take a long time to get to reproductive size, and they might have like one pup a year, right? So I'm not saying do eat shark, because I like shark and big, right? But some kind of protection should be in place. Yeah, you know, like you must have a size limit or at least a ban on harvesting the endangered species, you know?
And these hammerhead sharks, I mean, they don't interfere with humans at all.
Well, I mean, sharks tend to attack people most of the time by mistaken identity. So take, for example, the bull shark that it had in Tobago, the incident with the foreigner, right? And then they put a big bounty on the shark. So right. Remember now, everybody now going and try to cash in on this bounty. You know, you don't know which shark it was. But these sharks, all of them is important keystone species. And I believe that, you know, they should have some kind of protection in place for them.
Yeah, I mean, I know that it's, I know it's very easy for us to enter things like overfishing and threaten.
Of course.
The natural order of things.
Right.
So, tell me something. What was one of the fears that you had when entering this business?
Fears? Well, I mean, you always have the fear, you know, it not working out or something could happen, right? But to be honest with you, you're always nervous because these are living things, as I said. And, you know, things can go bad. I remember one time, I would have had a big batch of Cascadura fingerlings, right? So ready to go to the client. And one mistake that I would have made, killed the entire batch of 4,000 fish.
4,000 fish?
Yeah, 4,000 fish.
You know, you have a hatchery, but... How do you really get, maybe I had a dumb question, fish to really reproduce at the rate that you need them to? Because it's not something you can make it. You're not making roots, right? You can't go and buy as much flour as you want to make more roti then. How do you get fish to actually reproduce to the levels that you need to generate this fish?
Right. So that's a very good question. So really and truly, it's all about having enough broodstock. Broodstock is in terms of, you know, having the parents, right? Males and females that can reproduce. We do produce a lot of tilapia. Last year, Cascadu was bad. I was running to a lot of issues with production. I did end up getting some fry, but I ended up getting some problem with them and, like, their whiskers. I had some problem with their whiskers and all kind of drama, so... really and truly is about having the broodstock. Once you have enough broodstock, because we don't use any kind of hormones or like any kind of treatment to induce spawning or anything like that. We try to do everything naturally.
How much or how many eggs, should I ask, would a typical fish like tilapia lay, and then how often?
Well, tilapia is not a native fish to Trinidad and Tobago, so we can start with that. Tilapia is not a native fish to Trinidad and Tobago. Tilapia is actually from Africa, right? Tilapia is a very, very resilient fish. They need to survive in one of the most difficult countries in the world. Well, places in the world to live, because everything in Africa wants to eat you, right? A typical tilapia, the size that I have right now, because I have like 4-pound females, they would produce roughly 2,000 babies at a time.
Oh, and... 2,000?
Yeah, 2,000 from one fish, and it's every 17 days. But at the size that it is right now, they actually slow down on their reproduction. So I actually have to phase these adults out and bring in a newer, younger set.
Wait, you're telling me 2,000 fish every 17 days?
Yep.
And yes. Do they continuously reproduce?
Tilapia, yes. Tilapia will continuously reproduce once conditions are favorable. So that's why we have the super meals, right? And I'm also working on a process of using heat treatment where we actually just raise the temperature for a set period of time. which would prevent an enzyme from being produced, which that is turn testosterone into estrogen and cause fishes to become female. So we basically working on trying to find a natural way, because this is something that's happening in nature, right? Tilapia is a fish that they kind of like reptiles. You know, some reptiles, temperature is determined their sex. It could also happen with tilapia. Also, it is genetic, right? But the influence of temperature could cause them to remain males.
So this is information that I never knew, and I'm pretty sure that many of our listeners never knew this as well.
Yeah, of course. Of course, right? So the thing about it is a lot of people will come and buy tilapia to put it into their ponds or their home recreational ponds, right? And a lot of people will be like, you know, so how much females do you think are getting here? And I'll be like, well, we got about 10% females from our super male batch, right? Supposedly, they'll be like, you think we will get enough? But really and truly, if you get two females in a big pond, that is more than enough. If you think about it, once they start reproducing without predators, yeah, that pond is going to be full in no time.
And how long does it take from, we call them fingerlings?
Fingerlings.
How long do they take from fingerlings to adults that are able to consume?
All right, let me say fingerlings. From fingerling size to adult size, 5 to 7 months, right? And it depends heavily on your care of the system, right? Because some people, I actually had a client, that multiple clients. One client would have bought fish from me, and 7 months later, there was palm size. That's less than a pound. And I had another person buy fish from me, and 7 months later, there was 2 pounds. So I was quite curious, and I was asking, you know, what is the difference, right? So I would have asked the guy who had the smaller fish, how often do you clean your filters? He said, well, boy, I don't really have time for that, like once every 2 months. And then the other guy, I was like, so how often do you clean your filters? He said, well, every day. So you see how much of a big difference proper maintenance would make in production. So what I realize is a lot of people in Trinidad who are involved in fish farming, or who might have been in the past, they probably would not have taken the time to really do the work that was necessary in order to get the kind of yields that you want.
But if somebody were to take tilapia and put them into a pond, they have to manually feed them often enough, or are they usually able to access food in there somehow?
Right. So if you have a mud pond, depending on the stocking density or the amount of fish that you're putting into the pond, most of the times you may not have to feed them at all. Right. If it is, you could just feed them as a hobby. Then so you could just go and throw food for them just so you could get to see them really and truly. Right. But if the pond is really overcrowded, or it is that you want them to grow a little faster, you could actually feed them. Right. But the mud ponds tend to naturally produce food for the fish. It's only at a point where the system can no longer support the amount of fish that it have in terms of feed, in terms of the generation of feed, then you would have to significantly put in feed. Now, that is not a tank-based system. Once you're using tanks, you have to feed your fish because they can't get food anywhere else.
You know, most of the farmers that I know who have ponds, and they decide to put tilapia in there or some other fish, it's never really for a business. For them, it's like a hobby.
A hobby.
I have a farm. Mm-hmm. I have a pond. I'll bring the family on a weekend to cook, and they'll throw a line and maybe catch something.
Mm-hmm.
They never actually turn it into a business. I've a question coming in here. Somebody wants to know, how do you transport the fish when you're selling them?
Oh, well, I use oxygen. I have a tank with oxygen, so we bag them, put oxygen in the bag, and send them off.
Let's say a bag, like those small clear bags that they use for like...
Yeah, but baby, you have big ones. We have big bags. It depends on the quantity, obviously, right? So we have small bags and we have bigger bags.
Now, scaling this up, would you say that you're limited by markets, or would you say that you're limited by equipment?
I don't believe... Okay, so I sometimes I would tell people, yeah, the market for tilapia do exist. Right, but That's not true. Because I recently went to training that they had locally here for fish farmers. I mean, most people come in for aquaponics, right? But it had one other guy there who is a fish farmer. And he was telling me he's produced something like 25,000 pounds a year. And he doesn't have enough fish.
Wow.
Yeah? So the thing is, even when I grow fish to like palm size, they don't stay. They sell out.
Is it that people specifically looking for tilapia to eat? Why would people come to you for tilapia versus, say, go to a fish vendor to buy another type of fish?
Right. Well, this is something that is a little bit deeper, right? So when we talk about that, like, okay, so pregnant women, they would tell them to eat a lot of fish, but they will advise them to stay away from fish from the sea, right? Because fish from the sea, they tend to bioaccumulate mercury. And as I mentioned earlier, mercury is a neurotoxin, and it will easily pass the blood-brain barrier, and it also passes through the placental barrier. So I remember a baby's brain will be rapidly developing. So that mercury will pass through there and impact that child's brain, causing severe problems.
I have never realized that.
A lot of people know it, you know, because recently when they would have pulled up the shark, I would have commented on the post, and somebody would have said mercury had to be good for something. Mercury is a heavy metal and not good for anything. Probably fine in gold. You know?
Wow. All right. This is a lot of information they have. And they know, I know maybe a decade ago, maybe more, they would have experimented with getting into shrimp or crayfish farming. That was through the government.
Right. That was SIDC.
Whatever happened to that?
Well, they actually shut down SIDC. I'm not sure what happened with it, but I know that they shut it down.
What is the potential then for an operation like yours to enter some sort of a shellfish type business?
Well, actually, at one point in time, I was looking into doing the Malaysian freshwater prawns, right? I actually had the broodstock and everything, but the thing I learned about them, IMA did do a pilot project on growing them, right? These species, although they are freshwater, their larva needs seawater or brackish water in order to develop, right? The larva goes through 13 molts before they become post-larva, and then they swim back upstream to freshwater, right? The males of this species, they have a hierarchical system. So you have the blue claw males, the orange claw males, and the small claw males. In a tank or hatchery-based system, like a tank system, it is more efficient for a male to stay small rather than him become a big blue claw male and have to fight with all the rest. He could just stay a small claw male, which is for the biggest, he's got about 3 inches, and sneak in and meet with a female whenever a blue claw trying to meet with her. Now, the blue claws is getting very, very big, but because they are the most dominant ones. The orange claw males, they are second in the hierarchy, and they are trying to outgrow the biggest blue claw male you have. So you see this whole interaction between them. Now, it actually causes a problem, because unless you have a sizable mud pond to say Lego these crayfish in there, you will only end up with a lot of small claw males, which you wouldn't really be able to make much money off of. And in terms of the investment, a bag of sea salt for you to make seawater for a tank is about $500. So let me estimate to make one of my tanks, which is 2,250 gallons salt water, I would need over $2,000 in sea salt.
Right.
So if you have access to the ocean, and you have like land near the ocean, yes. By all means, yes. You could do shrimp farming. You could do prawn farming, although you will have to get the necessary approval from the EMA in order to discharge your wastewater, right? But by all means, you could do it once you have access to the sea.
Good information. All right, we need to go to a quick commercial break. When we get back, we're going to get back into Mr. Shivan Thurban. Stay tuned. Mm-hmm.
And now we return to Agribusiness Innovations.
As a young businessman,
mm-hmm.
you ever thought about, you know, maybe you're under stress and saying, listen, I had enough of this. I want to kind of get into something more stable, maybe something that could potentially be more lucrative?
Well, you know, that's something that is always, it's always something that, you know, young people would consider, but I believe I kind of have a love for this and I really don't see myself doing anything else. You know, that's kind of why I stay in it. For me, it's not just about money. It's also a passion for me. It's a love.
Now, going beyond this, getting into something like aquarium fish, is it something that you consider or is it something that directs for you?
Well, actually, I started off with aquarium fish, but through the COVID pandemic, you know, the last COVID pandemic that we would have had, I realized that aquarium fish is more of a luxury, you know. Food security is really what is important, more important for Trinidad and Tobago.
So the generation of feed for the fish that you have, is it something that you have to buy? Or is it something that you have to make? Because I remember meeting a guy years ago who was setting up a business that was using waste cassava peels and he was going to try to turn it into fish feed. How do you approach that?
Mm. Well, I use feed that is imported, actually. I actually used to use NFM feed, but the thing about it is, if you think about it, tilapia is not a fish that has come as an adult. They are born as babies, which is probably about a centimeter long, and you had to grow them through that process before they become adults. At the time, NFM would have only produced a large pellet, which is about 6 millimeters, right? And the crude protein content wouldn't be enough for young developing fry. So we actually use imported feed. There is imported feed currently on the market, Ziegler tilapia feed, Ziegler. They have a whole line of feeds that we use.
Tosca, what do you think about the tilapia business? Because, I mean, hearing that fish could be breeding every 17 days and they're looking at potentially 2,000 of them and then 7 months to maturity, I find off the top of my head that math sounding kind of interesting.
The maths Matson.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the matsmatsen for sure. Now, the thing about it is, sorry,
from the taste of tilapia, it's a cleaner fish, at least in my opinion, and I'm not sure what others think, but a fresher fish,
mm-hmm.
more affordable, I think.
Yes.
Than salmon, Mr. Salmon.
Well, when in terms of salmon, it had to be like foreign salmon. So let me do a quick course breakdown for you, because I was actually going into this here, right? So take for example Price Mart have fillets from Chile. The fillets from Chile is $106 for 2.2 kg bag already filleted, right? But a fish from my system might cost me $8 just to get an adult size, which is about 1 pound, 1.5 pounds, right? So then when I fillet them, now we had to account 33% to 40% for one fish. That's the yield, right? The yield in fillets. So it would take around 3 fish to make 1 pound of fillets. So you're already up to $24 a pound, right? So when you add in the additional cost, so that's like, let me say, processing and packaging, let me say you get a $30 just to break even, right? So our fillets are already $145.50 to match Price Mart size packaging. So if you think about it, our population, a lot of them will say, hey, nah, that fish is too expensive. I'd rather go and buy fillets from Price Mart. It's so much cheaper. So that is one of the problems that we have. But people who do try the local fish, they are extremely pleased with it. It is completely different from that foreign-raised fish. It's a lot fresher and, you know, is local. You can kind of guarantee the quality.
Would scale, or if not scale, what would allow us to expand this industry to be more competitive?
In order for us to be more competitive, we have to have feed that is a more affordable price. because the feed at a more affordable price would definitely impact the price of the fish, right? Because I actually contacted a wholesaler who packages and whatever, and they was telling me that they would want to buy for $7 a pound. So if they're buying for $7 a pound and costing me $8 a pound to raise the fish, then I ain't making nothing there.
No.
Right? So this is why I was actually looking into starting to do my own thing. But obviously I had to find a way to do it because I was just one little small guy trying to do something for the country, right? But, you know, somebody would say, why pay $15 a pound for tilapia when I could get redfish to a carry? But are these species really better for your consumption? Because remember, these fish are also predators, right? And it has something called biomagnification, right? So every little thing that eats in something have a little bit of mercury in it. And then the big things, like let me say that big shark, them eating the bigger things, and that mercury now amplifying in these fish. So like that specific shark that was caught, that 640-pound shark, has enough mercury, probably about as much mercury as a thermometer.
But that's if you consume the entire shark.
Well, yeah, but remember, if you consume even a portion of this, you're still getting some of that toxin into your body. And it is take a long time for that mercury to actually come out of you, if not at all.
Is it that fish in our region tend to get that more, or would you say that all fish in the sea would have that exposure to mercury? I'm just wondering, because of our petrochemical base.
Of course. Right, so our petrochemical base and all these things that we have been dumping into the ocean for the past however long, all these things get into the fish, right? And also, the world's ocean is polluted. It is very heavily polluted. So, these things will climb up the trophic levels eventually to us, because we are basically the top predator. But really and truly, if you really get into it, right, we have bigger problems in China, because I would have went to fisheries division at a point in time, and they would have had some bycatch samples. So I don't know if you know about shrimp trawling, right? So they pass this big net and catch every little thing that have there, including the shrimp. And I couldn't believe my eyes. I had 5 crocus bags full of baby fish, from kingfish all the way to herring. Babies, right? Just dead and discarded. Discarded, right? So I say, wait, where are they getting all this fish from? They said, this is just a sample of the entire amount of fish just discarded. So we technically destroying our own fishery. We are decimating our fisheries on the outside. So we need to look at alternatives in terms of getting additional sources of protein so that we would not have to destroy our natural resources like that, you know?
Because Shivan, is there any limitation on the use of trawling?
I am not sure. Maybe there is, but that is that just to know that it have tons of fish just discarded like that, young fish that have not reached their reproductive prime, even, you know, go for future generation, that is just sad.
I've always heard, especially in Tobago, that's a practice that they want to discourage because of just the sheer amount of destruction. Just as you said, you're destroying fish, you're destroying corals, you're disrupting the seabed. But I don't know the extent to which the laws are there. And then further from that, even if there are laws, the extent to which we are actually capable of enforcing the laws.
Exactly.
That becomes important when you're out there in the middle of the sea, who's actually going to be coming in to check it.
Right. So what they could do is actually enforce it at the market. So you can't enforce it out there, but you create fines and penalties for people who bring in these things to the shore so that they will be dissuaded from even bringing it there, or from even trying to get it onto the shore. Or maybe they could have some other method implemented. You know, it have things that they could do. It's just for us to figure out something and really make it work, because, I mean, I pass by plenty fish vendor stalls, and the amount of sharks I see just lie up there, I was like, wow. Now, boy, that's not good. That's not good at all.
Very often I see small sharks, and more often than I like, I see dolphins.
Well, I never see a dolphin yet. That would break my heart.
Yeah, it's something that I've seen some vendors have. I don't know if it is something that they caught on purpose or if it's just something that got caught up in the nets and then they just kept. I'm not too sure, but I up to recently, I think I would have seen that. When there are stakeholder consultations and they're looking for feedback on how the entire industry could be improved, are you ever included in that?
No. Because remember, I am not a fish vendor. So they would say, you know, he had nothing to do with this. You know, but as a biologist, as an ecologist, seeing this kind of thing, it really and truly is disheartening. Because, I mean, everybody should have, you see the same reaction everybody had to that ocelot getting shot. Everybody should have that same reaction to that big shark getting pulled up on shore.
Do we actually have data on what is happening in the sea in terms of the population, their size, their health? Are we overfishing right now? Do we know?
Well, that's a good question. But based on the, without lack of data, let me say we don't have data, but I know it have some studies that went into the sharks and whatever, because I believe Dr. Mohammed would have done some research on sharks and mercury content, right? Especially hammerhead, etc., right? But let me look at just where the fishermen have to go in order to get the fish. So the thing about it is the price increasing because they have to go further to get the fish. So think about it. You wouldn't really have to go far if something is abundant.
Understood. I mean, I know some fishermen, and I always ask them, okay, how it working for you right now? You're getting more, you're getting less. So I'm getting that feedback, but I never actually know if it's just natural variations or if it's long-term effects that we're seeing. I don't know the extent to which the population locally is consuming more or less seafood.
Well, I know that most of the population in Trinidad and Tobago, we are heavily dependent on the capture fisheries. They see, most people see fish farming as just, you know, them people on that side, they're doing that. But we like fish from the sea, you know? But I would encourage people to be more open to trying fish that are farmed, especially local fish. I ain't talking about fish that come from China and Chile and all them other countries, because them things, a lot of them countries, they don't regulate what they're doing. They mightn't be regulating what they're doing, and that's why their stuff might be cheaper. Right, but in Trinidad, we don't use antibiotics. We ain't feeding. We fish poo, right? And, you know, our fish is better. It is better. So I would encourage the population to actually be more open-minded towards trying farm fish locally.
So then you would say that there is some level of stigma towards fish farming?
Of course, because the internet has a lot of misinformation about tilapia, about how tilapia is unhealthy because it contains high omega 6, but the thing about it is when you really get into the research, it's not significantly much. And omega 6 is something that is necessary for humans to consume.
I guess that it's ironic because we consume farmed chicken, we consume farmed pork, we would consume farmed pig, beef.
Right.
But we would have a stigma against farm fish.
Exactly. And we out here eating sharks that full of mercury, but we afraid of a little omega 6 from tilapia. You know?
What do you think then, based on trends that you're seeing, what do you think then is the future of the farmed fish industry in China? Because I also believe that with the growth of hydroponics, we should have been seeing more and more people getting into this.
Well, I am actually in aquaponics. So aquaponics is basically the hydroponics component attached to fish, right? So you're using the water from the fish tanks to grow plants. Now, as I explained earlier, hydroponics is easy. You can set that up and you can probably forget about it obviously you had to maintain some things, you had to monitor, right? But aquaponics now is completely different, because these plants that are growing, you cannot spray with chemicals. You can't. I don't spray no fertilizer. I don't spray no no fertilizer, no pesticide, and no fungicide. The most I will use on my farm is baking soda and neem oil, right? The thing is, these things will kill my fish. I cannot use no pesticide, no fungicide, no fertilizers, really and truly. I might add a little bit of chelated iron because the plants tend to lack iron, right? Sometimes. I would add a little, we call this thing calcium. But how I would do it is I actually use lemon juice, right? And I put the lemon juice with some dolomite, which is calcium and magnesium. It's basically rock. And it would break it down and make it bioavailable to the fish. Well, not to the fish, to the plants, right? So the thing is, you could do it, but the constraints is where you will run into problems, because remember, let me say you end up with a little mite infestation on your lettuce. How are you going to treat it? Right? If you have a greenhouse, all well and good, because nothing's supposed to be getting into your greenhouse. But if it's open and exposed, then you might run the risk of having potential or disease outbreaks. So you had to find a way in order to treat them. So I tend to use baking soda and neem oil. Neem oil is tend to deal with the insects, and the baking soda will deal with fungus.
This sounds like quite a complicated business to be in. Something you really have to dedicate.
Yeah, it is very simple. I just tell people this all the time. Fish farming and aquaponics is very simple, but is also extremely complicated all at the same time. It is simple because you can put the fish in the tank and they can grow. But if you don't understand the science of what is going on in the tank, then you will end up in problems. Because what is happening is when you have fish at large densities in a tank, once you create a man-made barrier, the pH of that water, it tends to go down, right? When the pH goes down, then the ammonia will start to go up, because the beneficial bacteria that in your tank, they will no longer be able to function. They cannot break down that waste, that liquid waste, the ammonia and the nitrite. So the ammonia will tend to spike because the bacteria are dead. Your system basically crash. Now, the reason why you wouldn't see a problem immediately is because the pH and ammonia has a relationship, right? So when the pH is low, ammonia is in a less toxic form. But you have to also remember that these bacteria are not working to break it down. So it's just going to keep climbing and climbing and climbing and climbing and climbing, right? And as soon as you decide to do a water change, now it could shift the equilibrium and all your fish could die. So you had to be on top of that system. You must be monitoring it.
So how do you then manage to balance this business and family life? Because it sounds like you have to be in this thing every single day. Suppose you want to go on a vacation for a week, what happens?
Well, to be honest with you, I don't really go on vacations. but yeah, I mean, I could find a way. Once you understand the science, you could basically, what I would do is I would buff up. Okay, but this kind of, it might be above what we're talking about. But what I would do is it has something called KH, right? So carbonate hardness. And carbonate hardness is a determiner of pH, and it also helps to balance the pH. Right? It stabilizes it and it is balance it out. Carbonate hardness is basically the ability of water to resist a change in pH. Right? So if I buffer my pH up in the system, knowing that I wouldn't be around for about 3 or 4 days, then I could say, all right, well, I'm going to set the pH at this level, which would give me probably about a week or two time before it starts to decline again. Right? So I could just have somebody there to feed my fish.
Okay. So I guess if you had to, you could put something in place.
Of course.
So this brings us coming towards the top of the hour. Is there anything that you would want to make an ask policy-wise that would help the industry?
Well, the thing about it is, policy-wise, I don't really think we could have anything that we could do about it. But I do want to, as I brought to the country's attention earlier, the reason why we should conserve our fish resources in the ocean, right? Because I don't want to live to see the day when Trinidad and Tobago, we cannot benefit from fish from the sea, because you know we all like that. We all like our fish from the sea, right? So we need to really and truly forget about all the misinformation that we have out there, especially from America, because America is one of the biggest consumers of tilapia in the world, right? Never mind, they might be saying all these things that it ain't good, right? Really and truly, we need to put legislation in place in order to protect our natural resources, especially them sharks, because, I mean, people might be afraid of them. You mightn't see it as a big thing, but the length of time that it really takes for a shark to mature and the fact that they might only have like one pup a year, it really and truly does put them at a very, very serious disadvantage. And without them, with all these big predators, we will not be able to maintain our fisheries. It will have explosions of populations of fish that will damage the ecosystem, right? Because a lot of the fish that sharks eat, they tend to control the algae that goes over the coral. So if we don't have that in place, then the coral reefs will die. And when the reefs die, then everything gone, because reefs are basically hatcheries and nursery zones for fish that we consume. So it's important that we do something about that, right? So why not support the industry? Why not help it develop to where it needs to be? You know, be open to farm fish instead of believing the misinformation that it have out there.
That sounds good. And by extension, I mean, this would have been a good closing statement, but do you have any closing remarks for our listeners?
Well, that's really and truly it. I encourage them to try it. Try it, they might like it.
So if people would like to get in contact with you, or let's just say follow you online for more information on the company, the things that you're doing, maybe somebody has a pond that they want to get stock for, how can people find you?
Right, so they can find me on Facebook as Fishfins TT, Cascadura and Crayfish Hatchery. Right, they can find me on TikTok as well. I think that's the same name there, right? And you could also take my contact number, which is 367-4428.
Thank you so much, Shivan. This was a very interesting show. A lot of things that I never knew before. Mm-hmm. So I think that our listeners would have appreciated the information that was shared. Tosca, this week, that is it for me. Agribusiness Innovation. Next week, of course, I will be back here with another interesting guest, Agribusiness Innovation, Freedom 106.5 FM. Thank you to our listeners. Tosca, it's over to you.
You're tuned into the all-new Freedom 106.5. 106.5.